Hello and welcome to episode 7 of At Random. My name's Rick Timmis.
And I'm John Wordsworth.
Tonight we've got an extended show for you, so remember people, use the pause button. Some exciting things coming up in the show. John, do you want to give us a quick run through what we're touching on?
Yeah, so after last month we thought it was a good idea to revisit Google Plus and see how it's growing, or maybe not. And naturally we've also got our three app reviews coming up, but I'll save the special one for you, Rick.
Fantastic. Okay, well, we're delighted in this episode for the first time. We've actually got a guest joining us on the show. Chris Brennan from the Dennis Group. He's going to be joining us and talking about a fantastic new magazine concept that we're really looking forward to. So that's going to be pretty good stuff. And of course, we've had another message from our friend Jerry.
Good old Jerry.
Should be a good show. Okay, without further ado then, we're going to switch things around a little bit this time and we'll go straight on into the app reviews, John, yeah?
Yeah, let's go for it. Some slightly different, out of character apps this week, haven't we?
I'm saying nothing.
Not me, mine's completely in character.
Then why don't you kick off, Jackson?
All right, I'll show you just how in character my one is. Basically, to start with, it's a game app, because I know everybody loves game apps. If I could make my phone play ball a second, I've basically gone for a, I'm not sure how well known this game is, but it seems to be quite popular, something called Rackstare.
Right.
Nice.
And I like the opening screen.
Yeah, with the sexy Bond lady silhouette.
Yeah, and she's got a proper pair of hooters.
Funnily enough, this is quite central to the game's theme. I could tap on how to play, but it'd be utterly redundant. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tap on start and show you exactly what happens.
We're all men, we were born how to play this game.
Exactly, yeah. Now, if this ever gets going, here we are. Basically, you present it, it's quite cleverly done. You've got this, you've got the woman on the left here on the couch, and then there's you on the right. And you can control the man's head. So if I drag over, he looks over and you get points. But as she looks back, you've got to bring it back, depending on how quickly you can drag his head back. And it's all quite cleverly done, because, see, I got caught out. Because I was looking over there, and that's why she covered herself up, yeah.
But she moved her head back really fast. It was like, oh, and she swung around like she knows you were looking.
Exactly. And it's all quite cleverly done, because it's all done with video footage, as far as I can see. And the only way I can think of what they've done is they've got two bits of video with her bit on the left, my bit on the right, and they're playing it forward and reversing it depending on which way you're dragging. And so I can, basically, if I can get a drag to work properly, here we go. And so when I...
Oh, you got away with it. Oh, that was cheeky, wasn't it?
I do love how indignant she looks and how pervy the guy looks.
She's got a lovely pair of legs.
I didn't realise that they put you in this game, Jack.
I'm uncredited as the couch. But basically, yeah, I just thought it was quite... I mean, all the juvenility aside, I thought it was quite clever the way they'd done it. With basically one bit of footage and each one is being reversed or played in a normal direction on each side, depending on which way you're dragging your finger or what she's reacting to. But it's quite fun trying to fill up your meter without being caught, even though it's essentially the same thing over and over again.
The only thing I think that the only thing that makes it look slightly unnatural is just the eyes. There's a little bit too much of whites of their eyes there. But yes. Other than that, it looks like a photograph. It's photorealistic quality, yeah. Isn't it?
I really do think it's just video being played in this. I suspect the thing with the white eyes is quite intentional, so that you can see, to emphasise the fact that people are looking at things, to see their eyes, if you know
making
what I mean.
Making a bit of a joke about itself.
Exactly. And also, of course, how do you know when she's looking back at you? Because you need to spot her moving back can shift your head back quickly, don't you?
Although the actors in the footage are all, it's all quite comically exaggerated, especially the guy who's brilliant.
So are there different levels, I say with quotes, because obviously
I mean, on the if you get the free version, which is the version I'm using here, then you basically, I see I got caught again, I can't help myself. If you use the free version, it's just the same woman over and over again, which is, it's no bad thing, lovely looking lady. But if you want to pay more money, then you get like more women. And but the ascending levels are basically you get less time to check her out, and she'll like look back and forth more quickly and you have more meter to fill up. It's basically, they just change the numbers. But for the most part, yeah, you can expand it by plopping more women on there.
That is going to be such a viral game, isn't it? You know, can it's, you imagine all of the all of the blokes that will, you know, have that and go, here, John, check this out.
Exactly.
Have a look at this, and then everybody will be down in load of it, and then we have an I score competitions. Has it got anything like Open Faint built into it or anything like that for sharing scores or?
I'm not aware of anything like that. And again, I'm not delved much into the other options of it because I just kept playing the game.
How dare you?
But if I bring it up again,
that's
a second,
a lovely silhouette there, isn't it? Look, scores, it has.
The presentations
the
are all
quite...
The
Open Faint thing, look.
Yeah.
Sure enough. If it's the kind of thing you feel like boasting about.
So, no, well, I think, no, but I think the thing about it is that it is definitely, it's, you know, the builders, the rugby players, lads, the, you know, the boys out having a lark in it down the pub, and then they're playing this, and then they're eye-scoring with one another, and... As a model, it's a really clever game idea in terms of a really strong hook, isn't it?
Joyously simple as well.
Yeah.
It's just a good little... It's a good gag game, isn't it? The kind of like thing you'd show to somebody, probably say, check this out, and then everybody has a laugh about it. And there's nothing terribly complicated, but it is good for a laugh, you know what I mean? And for, like, well, for free. You can't really complain for too long.
And how much is it if you pay for the paid upgrades?
I'm not 100%.
I think the extra level packs were 69p.
69p for another woman,
enough,
yeah.
Isn't it? Which is 69p for another woman.
Cheaper than most.
I reckon
women,
that's too much already.
It's like when you were abroad, wasn't it, Jack?
Yeah. If only I could remember.
My wife would be insulted if she thought that, you know, I was paying 69p for another woman. She'd go mental.
But yeah, that's Rackster. If you liked Brainiac, if you Reloaded, or even if you like ladies, I'd highly recommend it.
And do you know the pictures that you showed there as well? They weren't like, you know, women in a bikini or anything. The woman was quite nicely dressed.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's not a kind of broaching any parental boundaries or anything like that. It's not untasteful. You know what I mean?
No, like I say, the tone of it is very similar to Brainiac Science Abuse. When there'll be some woman and she's blatantly there to provide a bit of eye candy, but it's all just done in like a fun sort of way with nothing explicit going on. I mean, I've seen Carry On films that were more saucy.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah. That's cool. I quite like that. Will I get a copy? Don't know.
For free,
it's like that. Maybe for free. Might be worth it for a laugh. I don't know. Maybe. I'm worried about my wife seeing that. And what's this on your phone? Well, and then trying to explain to her. Well, what you have to do is you have to look down her blouse. Where are you going to go with that?
I was just researching it because Jackson brought on that random. Just doing my job. That's all.
I think it's disgusting. He's disgusting, and I'm never working with him again. Those words, right? All this stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Cool.
So, if you don't mind, I'm going to kick off with a bit of an iPad game that I found.
Cool.
This was one that cropped up. I usually try and keep my finger on the pulse a little bit with upcoming iPad games. Not massively, because they're kind of toy games, but... this one took me by surprise, and I logged into the App Store, and it was their number one bestseller for the day or week or whatever. And Sid Meier's Pirates.
Who's Sid Meier? Is that somebody famous?
He is someone famous. What else did he make? He's made a collection of games. I think he might have made a lot of the kind of Civilization games.
Oh, okay.
Civilization and Colonization.
Fair enough.
Okay. I think that's the same chap. That's a bit of a guess, but I think... But yeah, so he made this Pirates game, and now this is an old Atari ST and Amiga game,
right?
Which was a classic at the time, and they brought it out on the PC, and I've been thinking about buying it, because I think it's a bit of a classic still. It's always got like a £15 price tag on for a game that's 7 years old. I'm like, I don't particularly want to pay that
fee, yeah.
But then I saw that they've done the iPad version, and now, obviously it being an Amiga game, it's traditionally kind of a mouse-powered game. And I was intrigued to see how they'd handle it on a touchscreen. But, wow, what can I say? They've done a fantastic job. So if I just load it up where I got to last. Now, the premise is that you play a pirate and your family have been kidnapped 10 years ago. But you were let free. And then you turn to a pirate, and then you get to sail the seven seas in search of your family members. But in doing so, you get your ship, and then you get a crew behind you. So I've got a fairly big ship and crew going at the moment with my galleon. I've got 6,000 gold pieces.
I like the animation in that. That looks really, really cool.
And there's about... It's essentially a collection of about 5 or 6 mini-games, I guess, really, if we're being brutally honest. But it's an awful lot of fun. So here's a transport ship. An English raider. Here we go. I'll see if I can get close enough to start love it with fight with him.
I love all this thing with the boats like circling around each other and the way it tilts. The animation's all
good. Yeah, the animation's really good, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
This is really reminiscent of how it used to be. So when you start the game, I'm pretty sure that it used to be this case, but it's actually kind of randomised. So if you start again, you're playing a different game, like all the ports will be owned by different people and might even have different ports in different places. So,
okay.
I mean, definitely the treasures that you have to find are all in different places. So it's not like you can just go, haha, I'm playing a new game. I know the treasure of the sunken Rose Marie is actually over here. Because it isn't over there anymore, because it's a different game world.
Ah, so that's a good idea.
You have to find the treasure map, and then it will be a little map, and you have to try and figure out where it is.
So you can forget it, memory boy. You got no power.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. All those smug people who come round and just whip your high score, because I know where all the secret chambers are on Mario or Sonic. Well, take that.
But this is the combat here.
Peasant.
So, interesting, they've got like the wind in, so you have to worry about attacking the wind. Now, he's coming straight for me, but I've got 31 cannons on this, so I'm going to fire all those
cannons. No way, look at that. Oh, dear.
And his sails have gone now, so I can pretty much run circles around him.
He's actually
sinking. But I could go and collect those sailors if I was quick enough, but I wasn't. So I've sunk him beneath the waves. And now, if I go into an English port, the English will be slightly less favourable to me. Because I've just sunk an English ship.
Oh, okay.
If you sink too many of them, they won't let you into the English ports. So they'll just shoot you with the cannons at the edge of the port.
What's this little thing following you, then?
That's the second ship in my fleet.
Oh, okay.
So I shouldn't really be attacking the Spanish because I'm on their side. And I just did a dance with the governor's daughter, and she hasn't asked me to marry her yet. But
you should better hurry up or we sink some boats.
But if we attack a Spanish trade galleon, then...
So vicious. Just attacking random nations.
Ooh, is that bomb going to hit you? No.
He actually see all the cannonballs flying out the side.
Yeah, so there's a selection of different types of cannonballs.
Oh, no. You're under fire. Oh, look out.
Not the end of the world, because I'm going to fire 31 back at him.
How did you get 31 cannons?
I bought them all over time, because this is a massive galleon. It's a bit slow to move around, but...
So yours is a severely beefed up boat.
He's taken one shot at that. 31 cannonballs. Look at it run.
It's got no cannons left.
Running
now.
For cover.
I've destroyed all of his cannons. But there's also different shots. So one of them is good for taking down their sails. Oh, there's a guy there. I can pick him up. One of them's good for just destroying him.
Never mind that guy, shoot that boat.
And then I'll shoot it with my grape shots. But then, essentially, what you can then do is... Oh, they're all short.
Oh, he fell short.
Is you clash ships with him, and he'll either surrender or have a sword fight, and that's another mini-game where you have to have a sword fight with the captain of their ship.
Okay.
To try and take it over. And then you steal the cargo, choose to plunder the ship or keep it and repair it.
Plunder,
pillage.
So this guy's given up because obviously I gave him a good old pasting with my 31 cannons, and there are 13 sailors on board that want to join my crew. So I can either say no and let them drown, or I can welcome them aboard, which I'll do. Then I steal all the gold, 600 gold pieces, and lots of plunder, and I can either keep the ship or sink her. She's not badly damaged, so I keep her, and there you go, another ship in my pirate fleet.
Oh, yeah.
But the game evolves. It's just
an awful lot of fun. That is really good.
And there's a collection of mini-games, like I say. So when you aboard a ship, sometimes the captain's a bit more stubborn and you have to go through a sword fight with him, which is a case of swiping your finger across the screen. And then when you go into port, you can repair your ship and you can buy goods and you can sail around and sell goods if you want to have a peaceful game. But ultimately, you're looking for your lost family, so you have to find these clues, and you talk to like dodgy guys in the back of a tavern, and he gives you another clue or part of a treasure map. And I think I'm the 8th most fearsome pirate in the world at the moment, so you can hunt down the more fearsome pirates than you, so you can get them off the top spot and become the most fearsome pirate in the land. And then when you sail into a port, they know who you are and things. So
I like that. And how much was that?
It's about £2.59, I think.
That's a bargain. I was just thinking that that would be a really cool game to play. I think my daughter Rhiannon would quite enjoy that because it's got quite a fun kind of... lots of interactive element to it, as well as a nice storyline. It's kind of like we could have quite a bit of fun. And I think you could play that together as well, couldn't you? You know,
sit with her
and, you know, what we're going to do. And, you know, I like it.
It's kind of sandboxy, you know, when you start off, it's just, here's your boat. What do you want to do? And you can choose to go to a port and buy some spices and then go somewhere else and sell them, or you can choose to just go on a killing spree. But when you do, you kind of want to pick sides, really. So I picked the Spanish because they were rich at the time. And then I sunk all the English because the Spanish were at war with the English. And all that's kind
quite
of randomised, and it evolves over time. So now they're not.
Did I misinterpret that? Did you say you sunk all the English?
I did.
That's unforgivable behaviour, that is. I mean, we ought to take that iPad off him.
What would be unforgivable is ignoring the market forces.
But yeah, that's that's Sid Meier's Pirates, and that is definitely worth a look on your iPad, and you can check out the link from our show notes.
Fantastic. Yeah, cool.
So what do you bring to the table, Rick?
Right, settle down, boys. Settle down. So,
business app? Newspapers?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been looking at a new app for managing data, and I decided it wasn't any good, so I went for something completely different instead, and I've got a game.
No.
You wouldn't believe it. Right, I found this game. I was trawling around, oddly enough, looking for something completely unrelated on the App Store, and saw this space game called Galaxy on Fire 2. And it reminded me a little bit of a game I used to play years ago on the Spectrum and the BBC called Elite.
So
let me just fire this up a little bit. And now I have to say that I've been playing it for about 3 hours so far, and I'm rubbish. I can't even work out how to make it do things properly. It took me a part of the mission, just to put it in perspective, somebody told me that I had to go and load the ship with EMP bombs. It took me 15 minutes to figure out where the inventory was, where there was a list of weapons and different things, and there was all sorts of things. EMP rockets and this, that and the other. So I spent the next 20 minutes trying to load and install the EMP rockets and couldn't get it to do it, and it wouldn't let me take the game, fly the thing out of the launcher or do anything until I did this. And then eventually I realised by going back to inventory and reading everything that it didn't say install EMP rockets, it told me to load EMP bombs. That was where that was all going completely wrong. So having got that far, but... what I like about it, first of all, is the graphical quality on it. So you can see here on this intro screen, we've got Galaxy on Fire 2, and we've just scrolled past a world with a space station, and it really is kind of Babylon 5 type stuff. You can see, you know, this ship here and these worlds. Tap to continue to go into it.
Yeah, it's quite gorgeous. It's quite immersive already, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I really liked about it. Now, the great thing also about this app is that at the moment I'm just using a free version. The full version of this is £6.99, and that's what I looked at first of all. And I was on in an RM with it and thinking, £6.99, I'm not sure I really want to pay that.
It's a tall order for an app, isn't it? But on an iPad.
Yeah, I agree. And then I happened to see at the bottom that, or in the notes, that you could get the light version, which is free. So you get opportunity to play it in restricted, but also to learn how to play it, because I knew, obviously, you know, I'm all right with a word processor, but I haven't got a clue when it comes to playing a game. So yeah. It might be that I'll never have the intellectual quota to actually be able to play this. But anyway, going into the game, off you go and start getting playing, and you play this character, which I can't remember the guy's name just off the top of my head, but you play this character, and it is very much a bit like the kind of free space play that you would get in something like Elite, where you can load your ship with goods and you can fly around the galaxy and do different things. But there are also missions. So you can go into the space lounge, for example. So go into the space lounge here, which is the bar.
I've always loved that convention of taking the word and then sticking space on the front. We're going to go play some space golf.
Yeah.
Then have a space beer.
At the Space Olympics.
So This has got missions in it, and it tries to play the idea of that you can sort of interact. Now, obviously, these things are a bit pre-scripted, but you enter the space lounger, and there's some silhouetted characters here. So you can click on one of these, and then it will say, "Hello, Mr. Maxwell, you're talking to Sahir Hong here. Are you interested in a profitable job? Can you ship 24 containers full of weapons to Onatok? $4,900. And you can say, "Well, show me on the map. How risky is it? Okay or no thanks." So you can get short-term missions by going into the bar. Hmm. So that's one thread to the game. Then there's this overarching kind of mission, because you're also playing like an agent trying to help work out for the government. So these EMP bombs, for example, I was being tasked with taking those to deploy them on this guy and blow up his ship to paralyze him and not kill him, hence the reason why it was EMP bombs, so he could be captured. So you can go off doing missions like that, and then of course you've also got the ability to just sort of do some free reign stuff. And of course you can fly around, you know, inside of space. There's different things inside of the hangar, but you can also then launch. So if I say depart the station, and then I can start flying around, and then so you've got this like kind of in-game environment where you can talk to people, set up missions, and go on a kind of sort of like a role-playing type adventure. Mm. And then you can play the game here by just sort of flying around with there's basically a joystick on the screen here that allows you to just sort of change direction and fly around. And then you've got this, you know, shooting thing here where you can fire. You can tell I'm a professional gamer, can't you, with my description of shooting thing. But you know, it is, well, I think if you were any good at it, it would be quite good. I don't seem to be able to hit anything, really, very much at all. But it is quite good fun trying to shoot at stuff.
It looks quite responsive as a control system, considering it's all non-button based.
It is, yeah, exactly. And, you know, overall, you know, I've been very impressed with it, mainly because of the cinematic kind of Babylon 5 Battlestar Galactica type of, you know, setup. Because you can see here, I'm flying past this ship and it really does looks really real, like, you know.
Yeah.
And so the graphics really make it stand out from that perspective. Now, to be fair, I can't tell you a great deal more about what you can do in the game, other than you can see that there are sort of three or four threads to it here, and the quality of each aspect has really been put well together. Obviously, because we're on show, I haven't got the audio turned up here, but when you speak to those people, the voices actually come out and talk to you and so on and so forth. And then from this light version, you can upgrade to the full version as well, and I think there are mission packs and everything else. So I think it could be, you know, really something quite immersive.
Feels like a lot of fun.
So, yeah, I've certainly spent about, you know, probably 3 hours messing around with it, and I'm not very good yet, but it has certainly drawn me into wanting to play it more and fiddle around with it. And when I've got half an hour to spare, it's great to just sit around there and do that on it. So, overall, I'm pretty pleased with it, yeah.
That was Galaxy on Fire 2?
Galaxy on Fire 2, yeah, just the free version I'm playing at the moment, the light version, which is free of charge, but there's still plenty to do even in that.
So you've got lots of time to decide whether you want to drop the $6.99 or not.
Yes, exactly. And I think I would make that decision by seeing if I found myself playing the game, the light version, to its boundaries, then I think it would make sense to pay $6.99. And I think that that's a fair way to position it. $6.99 for an iPad game is quite a lot of money. Mm. You know, if you think, you know, the word processor and Office Suite is also $6.99, that kind of money. So it's quite expensive. But this light introduction means that I think by the time you get to that, you'd really see the values.
Yeah, if you play it to its boundaries, like you say, then you'll want to upgrade. So.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's obviously a fully developed game as well.
Yeah, absolutely it is. I mean, you can see there, you know, the quality of everything has been really well put together. It's very professional. It's really well done. Yeah, fantastic. Galaxy on Fire 2, that's Rick reviewing a game.
I'll check that one out.
Mind you, I noticed it was a game about resource management, among other things, and money management.
Yeah, Monopoly.
Yeah. Space Monopoly.
Yeah, Space Monopoly, yeah.
Fantastic. fantastic. I'm delighted to welcome Chris Brennan from the PADA application. He works with the Dennis Group. Good evening, Chris. How are you?
Good evening. I'm very well, thank you.
Fantastic. Chris, before we talk about your new project, PADA, we'd just like to get a little bit of background from you, just to sort of get a view. Now, I note from your posts that you have got both an iPad and an iPad 2, so I presume that you're partial to grabbing quite a few apps now and then. What's your favourite iPad app right now? Well, apart from PADA, of course.
Apart from PADA, of course, getting the corporate bit in first. It's really weird because I get so many and I look at so many, and I was thinking about each issue I have to put in sort of five of my favourites, and it's really difficult to narrow down. But one of my favourites at the minute is an app called Solver, which is like a calculator for morons, which is because I'm a moron when it comes to adding stuff up. And you know, I'm the kind of person who you will turn around and sort of say, right, 10% of 100 quid, what's that? This app, you type in sort of five nights at a hotel at 120 quid each, and it tells you in that way, instead of sort of typing out the actual sum, for want of a more grown up way of putting that. So I really like that because it's kind of like a real world calculator. It's not just a bunch of numbers, but you sort of type in, you know, what is 23% of 6,723, and it tells you that. You don't have to put like the equation in. The equation is the word I was looking for. And the other one, which is entirely personal because I most of my work is writing, is IA Writer, which is as if someone knew me very well and decided I want to write a word processor on the iPad for Chris, and this is how we're going to build it. And we're going to put, he's going to want this button here, and he's going to want that button there, and he's going to want it to do this. And that's, I just love that it, you know, someone thinks and works in the same way as me and built an app for me, which which I really like. Those two really stand out for me at the minute.
I have to say I'm a bit old school when it comes to reading, writing and arithmetic, and I do get quite worried when I go in and see people in the shops who are serving me, and they, you know, they can't figure out my change, or if it's £12.70. So I give them 15 and I say, you know, here's the 70, and this total look of confusion comes over their face. And obviously, you know, I can understand that an app like Solver really helps people like that. But what are they going to do when the batteries run out in the iPad, or, you know, or they haven't got the app available?
Well, my entire life has been built around pretending that I'm rubbish at maths, so that I don't have to ever learn maths. My maths teacher said to me when I was at school, he said, look, I know what you're doing, you just can't be bothered. You don't know. You just can't be bothered. So you just stick not bothering and we'll be fine. And I kind of thought, yeah, that probably is me. I probably could work it out. But it's just simpler to say, I don't know, because it's that thing with maths. You know, so many people say, oh, I'm no good at maths. In actual fact, what they mean is they can't be bothered. And that's probably the stage that I'm at still.
I made the mistake of doing the opposite and studying maths at university. So now whenever any sort of mundane question comes up with a number in it, they go, so John, what's the answer? Yeah. I don't care.
My sister's got four kids. And I used to make it out, when I was trying to work something out, I was trying to make it out, it was a challenge for them to learn. So I would say, somebody tell me, how much change do I need here? I've got, you know, add these three things up and tell me how much money I need. And I would blame, you know, that was cover, that was a challenge for the kids. Well, in actual fact, it was me. I couldn't, it says £9.99 plus £15.03. How do I work this out?
Oh, that sounds pretty cool. Well, we do a regular app review on the show where we look at two or three apps. So that's quite, that Solver app sounds quite cool. And I know obviously you said about IA Writer, which is an app that works for you. And That's reviewed in Padder. Is that reviewed in Padder this month, the latest issue, issue 2?
I think so, yes. I think it's in there.
Yeah.
The problem is, when on any magazine and any publication, you're working so many months in advance that when somebody says, oh, I saw the latest issue, that was great, you go, I was working on that about 6 months ago. What are you talking about? I think it's in issue 2. I think.
Okay, cool.
So no, you currently got 3 or 4 other issues that you're...
Yeah, I mean, basically, as I'm working and as it works, I've got the skeleton of issue 7 already sketched out. Issue 6 is commissioned, but not in yet. Issue 5 is almost ready, and issue 4 is being designed. So, you know, we're quite a way ahead, but which poses its own difficulties. But that's, you know, that's why when somebody sort of says, was it in issue 2? And I go, I think so.
We're not helping much. I don't know. Cool. Okay. Well, I suppose one of the questions that I wanted to ask here at random, we're a bit of a techie triangle, because each one of us kind of sits in a different corner when it comes to technology. John's pretty firmly fixed in the Apple camp right now, and Jackson is, well, as far as I'm concerned, Jackson's just evil and taken to the dark side. He's a big Windows dude. I absolutely love GNU Linux and open source stuff, because it is simply the greatest software that you can lay your hands on. For you, Chris, thinking about, you know, the kind of the three corners of the tech triangle, where do you sit? Where do you think your technology hat is there?
I'm probably stereotypically like a lot of people, which is firmly on the line between Microsoft and Apple. I've got a Windows 7 laptop, which I use and is fine and works and does things like every computer does. But I've also got an Apple laptop, which is my main machine when I need a laptop, and obviously the iPad. But I've also got a Windows 7 phone, so I'm not... I don't have an iPhone as well. So it's... I don't mind to mix it up, but I stick between the two. As for the Linux stuff, I'm absolutely nothing against it. I'm sure you can do everything that you can do, but I've just never... It's not something I've ever thought, I know, I'll have a go. Because I've never really needed to, and I started out as an Apple buyer, so I already had that, your machine's going to be £500 more expensive than it needs to be, but you're going to buy it anyway, kind of mindset. And it's not... I think sometimes the Linux, Windows, Apple argument sort of gets blown out of all proportion, and it's actually, I've no intrinsic love or hate of it. I've just never actually tried it because I've never had a need for it, rather than I've got some kind of tribal, desire to be all Apple or all Microsoft. I think a few years ago I was all Apple. I was Apple. But over the years, I kind of mellowed out a bit. It doesn't really matter. But I've just never tried Linux stuff. I've installed it and had a sort of look at it and kind of thought, it looks like the other computers I use. but nothing in a tribal sense. But I think, I'm towards the Apple end of the triangle, but I can see the Microsoft side as well. You know, the Linux bit is kind of over the hedge. I know it's there, but I don't visit it very often.
This is probably a good time for me to put my hand over Rick's mouth.
I'm
otherwise,
chewing on my hand here. No, no. What do you mean it's over the edge? I'll shut up for a minute. I'm going to go and salt now.
You set him off.
I love one of the things I do love about that is people are so passionate about it. And that is something that I really do admire. So I've become a bit kind of blasé and laid back about it. I'm like that, the old granddad who's seen it all, even though I'm extremely young. Seeing someone really passionate about something and saying, no, you could do it like this, or you could do it like that, I welcome that. I think that's great. I'm just not going to sort of ever probably try it out.
Right, while Rick leaves the room, it might be a good time just to ask, well, obviously in our heads you've been doing Padda for 2 months, but I'm sure you've been doing it for a lot longer. But what were you doing before Padda?
Before Padda, I was a freelance journalist writing for all the Mac titles. And I did some PC work as well. So basically anything technology related. I got into quite a specialised, well, not specialised, but I kind of got recognised for inkjet printer reviews, which is as exciting as it sounds.
A very colourful industry.
Yeah, that's best of. But yeah, I've reviewed a bazillion, colour inkjets, all in ones, that kind of thing. But generally, I like any freelancer on the planet will tell you, doesn't matter what the subject is, I can write you something about it. Just pay me. That's all. But yeah, mostly computer mags like Mac User and Mac Format were my mainstays, Mac World from time to time.
So did that mean then that there were lorry loads of inkjet printers being delivered to you to review and all stacked up in your garage?
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah. The next door neighbour is a lovely old lady, and she said she didn't mind taking the odd parcel in for me, and that was great, and I was like that. So I was doing an A3 colour inkjet test, and I had 5 A3 printers delivered, and that was the first thing that she got delivered when I was... So this old lady, she must be 90 years old, comes round timidly knocking on my door and says, "Hi, Chris, I've had a parcel or two delivered for you." And I went around, and a hallway was just A3 inkjet printers. But yeah, I mean, my house was, up until recently, was full of inkjet printers, inkjet paper, cartridges. Because when companies send you these things, it's one of the massive privileges of being a freelance journalist that reviews inkjets, is they send you all that paper and all, you know, the stuff in PC World that's £39 for 5 sheets of paper. They want to make sure that you use that because it's the best thing for their printer. And they want you to recommend that because they want you to... And you look at it and it's like, wow, this, I can't believe how expensive this is. The most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my entire life. But I'm going to print out all my holiday pictures on it as a test. My house was full of printers from all the manufacturers, paper from all the manufacturers, inkjet refilled. From all the manufacturers, so yeah, my house is just full of inkjet stuff until recently, which had its perks, I will admit.
That sounds so cool. So if we see a raft of inkjet printers out on eBay, we know where they're coming from. Particularly if they're, which brings me to a point. Actually, I mean, I was just going to ask. You've got a little bit of a hint of an accent there, Chris. Whereabouts are you from?
Well, I have been told I have a slight Yorkshire accent. I'm from Leeds originally, and that's where I am right now, but we live in Halifax. So, it's a mild Yorkshire accent, I would say. It's sometimes difficult to pin down unless I go right northern.
There it is. Jerry would like to meet you, I think.
It just all comes out in one go.
Yeah, we've got our own northern character Jerry, and I'm sure he'd like to meet you. Okay, well, look, let's get down to business a little bit, and the purpose of this is to talk about Padda. So let's start at the beginning. Can you tell us what Padda is, Chris?
Well, Padda, quite simply, is an iPad magazine for iPad users on the iPad. It's not a port of another magazine. It's not something that already existed. It's a brand new focused publication for the iPad, about the iPad. It really is that simple. That's the tagline, and that's what it always has been.
So, So obviously that, I mean, I haven't really seen anything like that. We did review a Times app, which obviously has a paper counterpart, but I certainly haven't seen anything that's making that kind of statement. When was the eureka moment for this? What sparked the idea for Padda?
Well, there wasn't a eureka moment as such, as kind of a slurping slide sideways out of another idea into this kind of moment. The original idea was for a paper magazine. I'd been asked, it's kind of one of those things that's lost in history. I can't remember whether I was asked or whether I asked first. But anyway, the publisher sort of said, you know, what do you think to this? And I said, I think you should do something like this. And he said, well, write that down and send me an email. So I wrote down probably, I think it was about 1,000 words of, you know, my blustery, this is what you should do and everyone else is wrong, and this is the kind of magazine I want to buy. And at that point, it was a print magazine. And we had a meeting about it, and it was all kind of like, yeah, this is quite cool, and how are we going to do this, and who are we going to compete against, and things like that. And then we kind of said, yeah, but this isn't a print magazine. This is a digital magazine, for want of a better term.
Mm.
And then we were kind of like, well, why do it on the web when there are websites? You know, what are we trying to do here? And it was kind of like, well, why don't we just do it on the iPad? That would be the thing. It's just on the iPad. It's not something that's meant to be something else. It's not a website. It's not a print magazine. It is specifically for the iPad. And of course, at that time, a lot of people were throwing the weight behind the iPad. They were kind of like, oh, this might be the best thing since sliced bread. Let's have a go. And it kind of all merged together to be the right decision at the right time. He said, crossing his fingers, and that was where we are. But that's, it was kind of a, like most ideas, I think, there wasn't like one sort of specific, oh, that's it, we've got it all down, and here we go, and that's what it's going to be. It was kind of like, well, we've got like a kernel of 5 good ideas here, and what's it going to be, and how are we going to work it out? And we ended up with Padda, which we hope was the right moment.
That's really interesting. Now, when I was a student, I did a few years as technical editor on the student newspaper. So when I, obviously, yeah, makes me an expert. but when I was looking over Padda, it did make me think of a few things. And one of those was that obviously your pages in Padda are no longer restricted to being the same size. Because when I was technical editor of the paper, cramming articles onto a page, and it was also such a mission sometimes, but that frees you from the traditional book format. And I was wondering if this has added any challenges to your design, or...
Yeah, it's really interesting. One of the difficult things has been, everyone who's worked on it has worked in magazines. So they've been used to exactly what you're saying. You know, a lot of people, it's not until you work on a magazine that you realise that there are only so many words to go in there. And it doesn't matter how complex or simple what you're trying to explain is. If it doesn't fill the white space, the editor comes and hits you over the head with a hammer and says, you know, that you need more words there. We're not going to make the pictures bigger. You need more words, or you need fewer words, whichever one it is. And with Padda, it's been quite refreshing because it's kind of like, well, we'll just make it a bit longer. We just make the page a bit longer, and it doesn't impact the same way it would in a magazine. If you put more pages in a magazine, you need, there's a whole slew of people that need to be involved in that process. You need the editor, you need the publisher, you need the ads manager, if you take adverts, perhaps even the printers to extend it. Whereas with Padda, we just make the pixels, you know, longer, and you know it. And that's how it fits. The other interesting thing, as far as I'm concerned, is the feedback we've got is that people think it's a very, it is a small magazine. There's no bones about it. But there's actually quite a lot of content down the page. But I think because it's not the same as say you get a proper print magazine and you flick through it. Even if it's full of adverts, it feels like a big thing. And one of the feedback points we've had from a few people is it doesn't feel like a big thing, which is interesting to me personally, because there is quite a lot of content in there. It just goes down as opposed to across when you'd be flicking through a magazine. And that's the challenge is to sort of how do we mix and match that, and how do we get, you know, how do we balance that out?
I guess like you say, I mean, you can have a page now which has got, say, 20 pages worth of content, but to the reader's mindset, that's still a page. So when they look at it, yeah, they see an 8-page magazine, but actually one of those pages is massive.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a lengthless thing. One of the other challenges as well, which has been mind-blowing at times, has been the terminology we use internally when we're discussing pages and all those things that everyone understands implicitly when you're talking about a print magazine, when you're in a meeting. Is it a page or is it a deck? Well, we call them decks, but they have pages. And trying to get five people in a room and have a conversation about that, and the first thing you have to do is, right, which terminology are we using for which thing? Which is what? Which is interesting for me because it's, we all know how magazines work, and you wouldn't need to have that conversation if we were talking about a print publication. It'd be like, it would all make sense. But the first 5 minutes of nearly every meeting for 6 months was, right, what terminology are we using for which bit here? Because it is a whole new way of doing things. Although I think to readers, in readers' minds, maybe it's not that different a product. You know, it's pixels rather than paper. But to them, the end result is marginally the same. Mm. Other expectations are the same, at least. Whereas actually producing it is a massively different challenge. It doesn't matter how much you understand magazines, the learning curve on making an iPad magazine is quite steep, but for some of the most, you know, curious reasons.
I think that, the key here is that traditionally you're working to a set size and you're delivering things to the printers, but the new thing here to me is that your delivery team are programmers, because there's coding involved, isn't there?
There is coding involved, but the tools that we use, the designer, Bill, literally just had to learn some extra bits of InDesign in order to actually do the work. He didn't have to code anything. He just had to learn how to use InDesign slightly differently. But that sounds simple. I kind of explain it in far too simple a word. I'm sure if Bill was here, he'd be like sort of saying, "Oh yeah, it was easy for you. You just said do this." But there is the coding issues are not something that really affected me in terms of building and designing the end product. They were more at the beginning. And what would I say? I think that once the design was set, once the app was set, it was quite easy just to move on from there. It was incredible to me. I thought that would be the big issue. I thought, you know, how are we going to get the app through authorization and through Apple, and how long will it take to code? In actual fact, that bit was I hesitate to say easy because I wasn't the person who had to do it. But that appeared to be one of the more simple steps in the process along the way. But in terms of writing, it's no different to me writing for any other magazine. You know, I just fire up a word processor and write, and I get pictures and I send them to the designer, and the designer designs the pages in InDesign, and then it all goes into an app, and then some magic happens somewhere, and it gets uploaded to Apple servers, and that's it. It's actually not the design in terms of the development of the actual code is not as big a job, I think, as you would expect.
Really interesting. I bet the interactive features that you have must have caused a few headaches. Like I've noticed there are some images where you can push the buttons next to it to change the image and things.
Yeah, the big thing with that is not getting carried away. We were really, really firm. Well, I was really, really firm from the outset because I'd seen some magazines and I'd waded through a 700 megabyte download, and you kind of get and you use it and you think, yeah, that's great, but what did it actually add? What did it bring? What was the use at the end of the day? You've added 100 megabytes to the size of your file to make a picture of, I don't know, an iPod rotate and then fly off the screen in with a firework followed, which is great. You can do that. That's great because it's a proof of concept. It's lovely, wonderful. But it's a bit like there's photo edit or not photo editing apps, video editing apps from years ago when people first got their hands on them. They had overlays on them and you could put all sorts of effects on. In actual fact, what most people do is chop the middle bits out, take out the bit where they left the camcorder on, and just use a straight cross dissolve. That's what people really want to see. And I think that's the same with the iPad production tools, the interactivity. You've got to be very miserly about how you use it, because otherwise it just becomes a random. Well, why does the iPod rotate? Why does the iPad screen crack and make a sound effect noise when you turn the page? It doesn't add or bring anything to it. So what we've done is simple, and tried to keep it that way. That's not to say that in the future we will add, you know, the sound effects and the fireworks that fly off the screen, but at the minute we were sort of aiming for and believe in the simplicity of it. One of my very annoying statements that I used to make in meetings is, "What would Apple do?" And
yeah,
but it's a genuine question. Apple would say, "Yeah, you can do that, but why?" And I think that that's it's a good standard to aim for. If you can come up with something that Apple might do, then I think you're on the right lines.
I'm not sure that I would agree with that, but being the bearded geek, perhaps I would say that. But I would agree with your thinking process about that. I mean, I have been able to read the first two issues of Padda so far, because obviously it's into its early release cycle for me. And I think the thing that struck me so strongly about it was the very fact that it really did firmly create this sense of a magazine on the iPad. It did that. And although there was, sure, some subtle motion, a little bit of subtle animation that suddenly made you think to yourself that, hey, this has actually got some features that I'm not used to in my standard magazine. But because there wasn't too much of it, and it was done very subtly, you did get that definite feeling of, you know, flicking through the pages, going backwards and forwards. I found myself, you know, jumping around in the magazine and using it in that kind of way. And I think if you add too much video or too much interactivity, you would definitely lose that. So that's been debated well, and it certainly came across in my experience, Chris, for sure.
I'm really glad that you said that, because that essentially was exactly what we were what we were hoping to achieve.
What's been, I mean, obviously that was my initial reaction to it. You said earlier on that you'd got, you know, you'd had quite a bit of feedback so far. What's the general consensus coming back from people?
Well, honestly, the general consensus is it is fairly, I don't know, it's difficult when you do something new because you're so close to it and you like it so much, it's difficult to take the criticism, you know, it's all rah. But generally, we've had good feedback. We've got a number of 5-star reviews in the App Store. We've got a number of 1-star reviews in the App Store as well, but I don't know an app out there that doesn't have that general split. In terms of emails, which I tend to put a bit more faith in, because people tend to have made a bit more effort. It's not that the 5-star review on iTunes is necessarily a bad thing. Well, either way, It's that it's too easy to sort of go rah, 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 rah. Whereas when someone's sending you an email, they're going to a bit of extra trouble, I think. And the general feedback has been, yeah, it's great, but it needs to be a bit bigger. Some people don't like my jokes, which is fine. I try not to take that too personally. But overall, you know, we've had good, positive feedback. And the interesting thing as well, we've had some really constructive negative feedback too. We haven't just had people saying, oh, this is rubbish. We've had people sort of, you know, a 3 or 4 paragraph letter from a lady who'd read it and thought the interactivity was subtle and nice. And I was going through this letter and it was all great. And it was like, you know, this is really interesting. But I probably won't buy any more issues. okay. But then the criticisms that she had were all perfectly valid and good ones, you know, for why she didn't like it. So, you know, you can't really argue with that. And one of the things I've always felt that some feedback is better than none. If we'd gone out there and got no emails or no reviews, I'd have been very, very worried. So even the stuff that says, you know, I don't like this bit, even if it's something that I really thought was great, I prefer getting that email than having nothing at all and no one giving an opinion on it. But generally, I'd say 75% good and 25% must try harder. Which is a bit like my school record, to be honest.
Well, it's a first at university, so.
Yeah. This is true, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I read that to my publisher when he says, you know, how's it going? I said, well, we're getting a first.
Now, obviously, you're ahead of the release cycle now because you were saying earlier on that you've almost got release 6 commissioned and you're working on the frameworks for 7. So as we go forward out over the next sort of 12 months or so, what can we expect to see happening in PADA? What sort of what direction are you taking it in? Anything special and exclusive you can let us know about?
Special and exclusive? No, probably not. At the minute, we're in that, obviously we're still early stages, so it's a case of a few things. It's looking at what we tried to do but couldn't fit in to see if we can fit that in. Because we've got a few, you know, we had a few ideas and stuff, and like all these things, you know, it had to be cut in order to achieve the delivery dates that we were looking for. So we're going to try and get some different features in. We're going to take on board all the feedback we've got. I'm going to ignore all the bad stuff and pretend it never happened. I just bask in the glory of being amazing. But we'll take that. And I think sort of in 12 to 18 months' time, we'll have a slightly larger magazine with more stuff in it. But we'll remain true to that original concept. You know, you won't suddenly have to download a 350 megabyte video. That's never going to happen until, you know, until someone throws a lot of money at me. but being serious, that's something that it's a real delicate balance. Before the download size gets stupidly out of control, you've really got to hold back, because you see some of the stuff that you can do in the tools, and you can do really easily. If it were a website, people would be going, "Wow, I can't believe you can do that easily." It's just, you know, it's not. It's, you know, the coders be like, what about all my beautiful code? And we don't need code. You just drag it on and say, animate and do this. And it does it, and it's amazing. But yeah, we'll still stick as closely as we can to a smaller size, and less animation than more where we can. Because it is a balance for people. The size of the download was one of the most important things. Keeping it below about 100 megabytes is really, really difficult. It's incredibly difficult. And I think people, it's one of those things, nobody cares And that's fine. I wouldn't expect any reader to care how big it to care. They would mark a difficult job for me to keep the download size small. That's fine. But that is the truth. It's quite difficult to. Yeah, we want to do this, and we want this high resolution picture, and we want, you know, you to tap on these, and you'll get 75 different versions of it. But in actual fact, we've got to temper it and sort of say, well, no, let's just do the 5. That's enough, and we'll move on to the next thing. And that way we've got some space left for this. So I think that, to come back to your original question, having gone massively off the point, that it'll be more of the same, probably a tiny bit more. But really, again, as well as that, the original vision for the text was, you don't want to read a 7,000 word article on your iPad. In fact, I find at some of the magazines that I've got on stuff like Zinio, or some of the download magazines, a 400-500 word review starts to get a bit painful. And you know, we could do that, and that would be great. But I think Pad is more of a light snack between meals magazine than a big chunky, you know. It's not wired. We're not gonna do a 10,000 word feature on, you know, a guy who's made gold out of dust in Arizona. You know, we're gonna do quick and quirky, and look at this, hey, cool, there you go. Which is what I, you know, it's kind of like I tend to find I'm using my iPad in sort of 10-20 minute bursts when I'm relaxing. If I'm working, I'm working on it, and I do work on it. And that drives people insane when I say, no, I actually do physical work on it. You know, a lot of my livelihood comes from working on the iPad. And if you can't work on it, it doesn't have flash. You know, that kind of thing. I want a 10-minute distraction. And Padda will, in 18 months, it might be a 15-minute distraction, but it'll be a fun distraction to fill a gap in your day.
So sticking to my fundamentally true nature then, do you think you might release a version for Linux?
Well, it's funny you should say that.
Fantastic. Chris, it's been absolutely delightful talking to you. I know that for our listeners, Pad is out there available on the App Store, and you can download a free version of it to go and take a look at it. Thank you very much for your time today. It's been a really interesting insight having a chat with you and seeing how you guys have put that together.
Oh, it's great. Thank you very much. It's been really interesting for me too. Try not to take too much of it too seriously, I hope.
Well, we're going to certainly have a look at the next version, and I think we'll probably do a review of it on At Random for the next show. Which will complement this interview, so that people can we'll give an in-depth review once we've had a chance to have a look at sort of two or three copies as the versions come out. Brilliant. Okay, well, Chris, you take care. Thanks once again for your time, and the best of luck with that. We hope you have every success with Padda. You take care now.
It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks a lot.
Take care, Chris. Bye-bye. Bye. Well, that was really cool. He was a really nice bloke. It was really interesting chatting to him.
Yeah, it was really good to talk to the developers and the team behind it, wasn't it? And see how they came up with the idea.
Absolutely. And I think that... do you know what I like about it is the simplicity. Is they've really approached it with a nice, tight sense of keep it simple. Keep it... you know, that's where the value is. And that shows in the app. I'm not going to say too much about that because I want to... bring that back to the table, and we'll do a little bit of a review in next week's show when we've read a couple of copies. But just brilliant to have Chris on the show and talking about that and adding that dynamic in there. It really shows that they're doing something pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really nice to get into the minds, isn't it? Because, I mean, we had some different conceptions, didn't we? We had some different ideas about how maybe they came up with it.
Well, certainly we thought there was a bit more programming involved in that, and we figured it might be a bit more technical than just, you know, they've obviously got a tool chain at work there that's helping them roll that out. And I hadn't really thought too much about you. You obviously mentioned your experience about the fact that you need to run to a tight page set and so on and so forth, and I hadn't thought of any of those kinds of constraints at all, really. So
then it's really interesting the way it was kind of, Like, because that instantly to me, I thought, oh, we've got really long pages, because you can get the overview of the comic, you know, the magazine up, and see all the pages, and you can see the long pages. And I thought, that's really interesting from a technical editing point of view. But like he said, interesting also that it gives you the preconception that it's a short magazine.
Yeah.
Because even if the pages are massive, there aren't many pages.
Yes, so no, that's right, yeah. A dozen or so pages for each different section or segment in the mag.
But anyway, it'll be interesting to see, especially how it evolves over the next few months, because I'm sure even, you know, it's going to have to come into its own, isn't it, a little bit.
And it's a new concept, and what's encouraging is it is getting quite a lot of, you know, quite considered feedback. He was mentioning there about lots of emails that he's getting and so on and so forth. So I think that people have obviously readily accepted it. Yeah. And if they take that user feedback on board, then I think it could be the start. I think it actually could be the bit of a forerunner to a potential market space for that. I've always felt the iPad's good, really, for almost that kind of particular application, just replacing the paper magazine with something electronic. So, yeah.
And kind of much like the iPad, sits between notebooks and phones.
Yeah.
Padder almost sits between a PDF and a web page.
Yeah,
because it's not confined like a PDF, but it's not all messy and in your face like a web page. So it kind of fits somewhere in the middle, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Cool. Well, we'll review it on show 8, and that'll be the app. So if you want to run out to the Apple App Store and download it before then, please go ahead and do. The app is called Padder, and you'll find it on the App Store.
It's completely free, so why not give it a go?
Hey up, lads, hiya, it's Jerry, Mank Techie coming back at ya, yeah, hey John, Rick, Jack, what's going on? Right, lads, I've been having a right mashing time, and nuts been just done rising this week. God, tell you what, I've never heard out like it, eh? I've been working at this office, a set of offices, trying to sort network protocol problems out, and they've been having loads of trouble with ADSL, man. It just don't work at all. And they had network engineering and another IT board come in, and these guys have been working for about 2 months trying to sort this out. Now, it's not my job, really, to sort that out down there. I've been doing application services and that kind of stuff for them, but it just totally started to mash me melon in the end. I just figured, like, I couldn't put up with it any longer. You know, you've got to have internet in an office if you're going to work. You can't run a business these days without effectively having proper internet connection. So in the end, it fell to me, Jerry Mank Techie, sort the problem out. Well, I tell you what, lads, it never ceases to astound me at the cretinous nature of some folk, right? Because these lads had come down and installed Ethernet cables and patch cables linking front BT box right across the building, and then at the same time they got all electric power cables, wrapped them up into coils and cable tied them to data pair. Well, it were like a massive induction loop that they'd installed in the thing. It was honestly, I reckon you could probably pick up our broadband on Mars, even though we didn't get none of it, like, because it was all being sent out by radio waves and fired out into space, I tell you. Anyhow, like, so I managed to get it all wired in right and sorted it all out, and I tell you what, it was no joke, really. I wanted to have a word with these lads, because they ought to know better, calling themselves techies and doing that kind of thing. It were ridiculous and totally unprofessional. So just to say, be careful when you got people like companies coming in and fitting your ADSL, etc. Make sure you've got a good techie on hand who knows what they're talking about. Otherwise, you could end up with piss poor performance on broadband, and that'll mash your melon right in. Anyway, needless to say, it's all looking good now, and everybody's thankful, and I were well praised. Me, Jerry Mank Techie, they praised me for fixing it all up and getting it working right. So that was a bit of a success story for you. I'm loving the show, lads, really am. It's absolutely fantastic what you're doing out there. It's a right lark, and I love listening to it on my radio. So keep it up, and I'll be in touch soon. Take it easy. Jerry, Mank Techie, out. I don't know. I don't. You know, he just never ceases to amaze me, that guy.
Oh, the sun never shines on Jerry, does it?
No, he has a lot of bad luck, doesn't he? But having said that, in this case, obviously you got to the bottom of the problem. And it just shows you that sometimes, well, ultimately, you know, you can have too many cooks spoiling the broth, can't you? Which is what it sounds like was going on there.
Tell you what, I could do a Jerry coming around to look at my router, actually. Every 48 hours or so, it decides to die. So maybe Jerry can give it a good kicking and I might sort it out.
Yeah, but is it doing your melanin or whatever he says?
Smashing my Swede. I'm all for it.
Cool.
Oh, brilliant. So, yeah, we're going to move on to a bit of Google magic.
Yeah, absolutely. So, my daughter is obviously learning about maths at the moment, mathematics at school, and obviously... one of the things that you get into as a child of her sort of age is learning about the biggest numbers. So she came down to me the other day, you see, and she said, "Oh, Daddy, what are you doing on your phone?" And I said, "Oh, I'm just putting some notes into Google Plus." And she said, "You've got a Googleplex on your phone." And I said, no, I've got Google Plus on my phone. "Do you know, Daddy, a Googleplex is the biggest number in the world? And it's a one with 10,000 zeros after it." And I thought to myself, actually, no, I didn't know that, but I wasn't talking about Googleplex. I was talking about Google Plus.
But thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, which I guess it introduces the segment, because Google Plus is what we're talking about, isn't it?
And they may have a Googleplex number of users and... one day.
Yeah.
If it gathers traction, if it picks up a bit of speed, yeah.
There's a feeble attempt there to link it in, but, you know.
Is that the bin lorry?
That's our latest shipment of iPads coming in.
Is it? More gadgets? Do you know what? My Commodore 64 hasn't turned up yet. That might be it.
Maybe it's in there.
The Commodore 64s have to reverse. Maybe that's
it. Well, it's a heavy thing.
It could be a delivery of my Commodore 64.
Have you got one on the way?
Oh, I didn't think you'd be able to resist.
I can't resist. No, yeah. I've got to have one. Well, not a Commodore 64, actually. It's the Vic Pro, the Commodore Vic Pro.
Yeah.
The fancy... In fact, it's a space Commodore Vic Pro. It looks space-age, doesn't it, really? So that might be the very thing turning up at Random Towers. Anyway, sorry about that, guys. I'm taking us away from the conversation. Shall we talk about Google Plus?
Google Plus it is.
Indeed, yes. Yeah. So we all kind of talked about it last month, and we just saw it as a brand new thing then, didn't we?
Yeah.
And I thought it'd be interesting to see where we are with it now, a month down the line.
Okay. Well, I have spent a lot of time trying to put the contacts that I have on it and getting invites out to people. And I'm still a bit perplexed at the moment as to whether Google is actively sending out invites for everybody that I put on my Google Plus, or whether it's being selective about it, because some of the people that I've spoken to, particularly if I've put them in, where you enter your friends into the box, if I've put them in one at a time and then said send the invitation, those people seem to have got an invite.
Oh.
But where I've keyed in a batch of people with a load of commas and then sent them, it's added them all to them but doesn't seem to have sent the invite. So
right.
I'm not sure where Google are with its... Is it still in testing? Is it live yet or whatever? But I'm just adding people, and certainly, you know, the people seem to be adding and moving on there. But I haven't really got, you know, all of my Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn people all across yet. But having had that opportunity to mess about with it, I have to say, I am definitely Google Plus'd. I really like it. I like the fact that it's sitting in my browser, first of all. I know it's a delicate, really subtle change, you know, this little bit of grey bit across the top.
Yeah.
But I really like that. I like that simplicity, because I don't particularly like over complexity. Mm. I like the fact that my search engine and my RSS reader is all there, as well as my analytics stuff and my Picasa, and then all of a sudden my circles and my friends and my timeline and everything is all in this one app there straight in the interface. I really like that. It's so convenient. and I have to say, managing, you know, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and all these different apps on your phone, and having to flip between different things is very time consuming.
It is. It is. Yeah. It can be very aggravating keeping track of all these disparate things, which all seem to work slightly differently anyway. And you only really want to do one thing for them. You want it all consolidated. I think everybody does. But I'm with you. I'm quite impressed with what they've got so far. It just needs that. It just needs more people on it, really. It just needs uptake.
Mm.
No reason. There's no reason why it shouldn't get it, apart from maybe an image, a perceived image of it. They think like it's not cool to be on Google Plus, perhaps. Like they think it's.
Yeah.
I can imagine people dismissing it as a bit of a faddy thing.
The thing is, you're going to have people in the Facebook camp that never went to Twitter because they thought, I've already got Facebook,
Yeah. Why
do I need to go to Twitter? And they're not going to go to Google Plus for the same reasons.
Yeah.
The Twitter people are probably the likely ones that went, finally, something that isn't Facebook, so I can talk with a bit more of a professional outlook.
Mm-hmm.
And, and I can just post simple messages to my friends. And now Google Plus is here, they have to try and pull both of those sets of people together. And I really like the vision of Google Plus, because the more I play with it, the more I'm convinced it's kind of a hybrid between Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, you can add all your friends to your friends circle, but you can also just follow people in your following circle. Mm. And I know it's just semantics, like actually what you're doing isn't vastly different to Facebook, but by having it in a followers circle, I feel like I'm not implying a connection with them, so I don't want to be their friend. They're just someone I met at a business meeting. I just want to follow them. But traditionally, I would have done that on Twitter and added my friends to Facebook. And now there's somewhere I can do both of them, which I think is great. But like you say, Jackson, I mean, until my friends and followers are on there, there's no point in me signing into it.
I've seen a few of the people that I've been adding just for fun, and they've obviously signed up to it. And they've like done a couple of things on it for a laugh, obviously, to see what it's like. But I suspect they'll run straight back to Facebook again.
Mm.
I'm not sure what it's going to take to bring them over from that. I suppose what you might get is like what you have with like the Android and iPhone thing. You'll get the backlash. We're sick of Facebook. We'll go to here. This one can be ours. You know what I mean? I don't know if it'll be. Rather than getting everybody, it'll just get everybody that's left over, which is terrible. makes them sound like bums begging for change, doesn't it? But no, when I say left over, I mean like, there's going to be a significant camp that don't want to use Facebook, but do want this connectivity. So I can see them carving out their own spot, probably running alongside it maybe, rather than trying to win everything at once, which isn't necessarily the most realistic goal anyway.
I do think their biggest kind of, maybe route to market, but their biggest almost selling point is, like you were saying earlier, Rick, it is all in the Google experience. And the only reason that I've actually logged into Plus now and then, which has actually been quite rare in the last month, is because I've logged into Google Mail, and in the corner there's been a notification from Google Plus.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And that is the thing at the moment that's keeping me going back to it now and then. I'm kind of hoping one of those notifications is your 500 friends from Facebook who've just joined Google Plus and stopped using Facebook.
Yeah.
Which it won't be, obviously. But if it were, then I would know that they're all in one place.
You're liking it too. I mean, and I know we understand the restriction of the people aren't there yet, but you're enjoying the framework and what it's giving you, what there is there.
Mm. I think I'm more of a fan of Twitter than Facebook. But I very much use Facebook for my friends and Twitter for kind of, I don't know, not necessarily professional, definitely professional, but also more like I don't want to just talk like I'm in a pub, you know?
Mm.
Facebook is like I'm trying to chat to my friends in a pub, whereas Twitter is kind of I want to have definitive short statements about things. If they want to read it or not, it's up to them.
But that made Facebook sound awesome. chatting in a pub.
But I do really like Plus at the moment because it is boiled down like Facebook started, so it's quite simple. It's not all Farmville requests.
Yes. There's a piece of me that, and I was just going to say that very thing, which was that there will be the the Facebook people who are firmly stuck in the Facebook experience. And to be fair, they do say there are people that think Facebook is the internet, isn't it? Mm, you know, yeah, that's all they ever do is go onto Facebook. And so there's that whole raft of people who are just Facebook-esque, really. And the email address for this next statement is devnull@random.org. And those people are welcome to stay on Facebook, and I want them to stay on Facebook because they are, you know, very... well, they've just been Facebookized, really, and I'm not sure that they have a great deal to offer in my world.
Mm.
And so I'm quite happy for them to stay there,
yeah,
and not bother coming over to Google Plus at all. And equally, there's this similar set. There is a certain set of people. You know, the people that do things like, I'm having marmalade on toast for breakfast with my tea,
yeah,
that are on Twitter.
Yeah.
And they're equally empty and vacuous,
yes,
and they can send email to that same address as yeah, well if they like, if they want to complain, because I hope they stay on Twitter. And yeah, what I'm hoping is that there is people in Facebook and Twitter and all of those limiting services that have got lots of creative things and lots of intellectual things to say and to offer, and I think that the Google platform will allow them to express themselves. And I'm open to that, to them coming and joining that platform.
Yep.
And for me, I think that I'm not overly worried that everybody comes across.
Mm.
I just see the Google Plus offers this mechanism that if just the creme, the cream come across, I think it would be really, really good. So there's a little bit of Facebook and Twitter poking, first off.
But, I think it's going to be, it's still interesting and it's still very tentative as to which way it's going to go. You know, I think its path hasn't yet been decided. It could still bomb or it could still shoot up.
I mean, where are Google at the moment in terms of actually putting out invites? Does anybody know? Are they releasing invites regularly? Is it still a little bit of a closed shop? Are they trying to create an air of mystery with that? Does anybody know?
I was under the impression now that the invites were open. So,
okay.
It would be in their interests, wouldn't it, rather than trying to cultivate this full sense of exclusivity. I remember in the early days of Gmail when you had to be invited, didn't you?
And that was fine for Gmail because you could email your Hotmail friends from your Gmail account.
But it felt like
that's not really fine with Plus because you can't Plus your Facebook friends.
No.
Yeah. It's Plus Gmail then was an exotic thing, wasn't it? It's like you either had your Hotmail or your Yahoo were the two main ones that I remember. It's probably more, but. But Gmail, so hey, Google are doing, Gmail sounded like pretty serious stuff, like you weren't mucking around if you did Gmail, this was like proper serious business stuff, so you could get away with like, say, oh yeah, it's invite only, alright, but these days people are wise to it.
If you got a Gmail address, you were awesome.
Yeah, you were. We're not anymore. Oh.
No, everybody's got one now, haven't they? It's like, you know, we obviously were very early to Plus. I mean, I think, in fact, in actual fact, unless somebody wants to challenge us on this, we were the first three accounts.
Challenge us. Go ahead and challenge us.
But first of all, it's open. That's great. I like the fact that it's got that messenger thing built into it. You know, the chat. Is it Google Chat? That's built in on the left-hand side, and you can log into that, and then people can just MSN you in real time. Mm. I love the fact that that is there rather than another gadget. I mean, I have Copete, which is an MSN messenger. I used to have it running on my desktop, and to be honest with you, I've got so sick of just it pinging with everything else pinging that now I just refuse to load it.
Yeah, sure.
I don't bother with it anymore. But I like that aspect of it. And, you know, I'm wondering whether, have you utilised that? Or do you think that people might move across and start using that? Because it's nice in the interface, it being there. What do you think about that?
I mean, Facebook obviously has a similar offering.
Does it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so Facebook has all your currently online friends in your bar at the bottom, so you just click on there and they all pop up. But I mean, I actually use a piece of software called Adium for the Mac, and that's just a universal chat client that's really good, and it logs into not only things like Google Talk, MSN, and ICQ, but it also logs into Facebook.
Okay. Right.
So I just use that.
So you draw them all into one client where you can just respond to them from whichever account it's posting to.
Yeah.
There's a sense of convenience about that.
And that's only the live chat, so it doesn't let me post to Facebook. Well, maybe it does, but I haven't used that.
Okay.
And I think there's a Windows client which I've just started using on my laptop called Trillium, and that does a similar thing. So, but that even integrates like the tweets and the Facebook messages, so I just fire up that one app when I want to be connected.
Oh, right. Trillium. I used to use that ages ago. I remember that one.
Yeah, I used it right back when it was kind of in its first version, maybe 10 years ago or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I hadn't used it for many years, and then I went back to it, and it's still as good as it was. Mm. They've cut its memory usage right down. So
good.
It uses 12 megs of RAM or something while doing all these things. So.
Well, there's three apps on the Linux desktop, depending on which one that you use, that can do that kind of thing. Copete, Empathy, and Pigeon. Pigeon's very popular. Empathy comes built into Ubuntu, into the taskbar, which is really cool. But because I've never really had, I think I had a Hotmail chat account, and that was it. I didn't have several accounts with Jabber and ICQ and so on and so forth, so it didn't really matter. And it doesn't really matter to me now, to be honest, leaving the MSN account, because my friends have, you know, obviously anything to do with Microsoft, they've all just left that behind. And nobody wants to know. So for me, Google Talk. And I think I even got that Google Talk account just as part of my Google Plus. I mean, I never had an account before, but now I've got one. And so that was quite cool. I like that.
You could always log into Google Talk with just your Gmail account, but obviously you didn't necessarily know that.
No, right, okay. Yeah, no, because I haven't used it a great deal. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, only now that they're making these tools available, I'm actually seeing Google as much more than just a kind of web analytics, web master's set of tools and a search engine, and seeing it more as a kind of sort of everyday platform for interacting with the community, which I've never really looked at Google in that way before, even with Wave. I haven't.
We were the only three users on Wave.
That is absolutely true. Yeah, most definitely.
I'm not sure I used Google Wave. At least I can't be sure. It may have happened and I don't remember. But
what about... the next question is... And I'm going to throw it to you two guys first of all. But obviously, we used the Hangout, didn't we?
Yes,
and we
that's
got connected into the Hangout. What did you think of that?
I was surprised at how fluid that was, because usually using a webcam, I'm used to it like all snarling up all the time. And to be fair, there were a couple of glitches, but it was quite good because like we were all talking to each other, we could all see each other's faces at any one time, and we even used the YouTube video sharing thing, didn't we?
Yeah.
With the motorbikes crashing and stuff like that.
That bird doing that burnout, she ought to go onto that stack bar stack. You get her doing a burnout on a bike and you've got to look down the top. That'd be cool. But yeah, we did. You're absolutely right.
That was pretty good, actually. Worked out well. Quite well impressed. It was a bit of a faff because we had to install the plugins, didn't we?
For Chrome, for the browser.
But that's part of the course with most things, isn't it? There's usually a plugin involved and then you can... relax.
No, different than installing Skype, is it?
I guess I just
kind of hoped that with Chrome being Google's browser, it would just be there.
I think we're pretty close to all that, though, aren't we? I mean, it's obviously their aim to release a browser that just does all that out of the box. So you can see where all this is going to get a lot better, I think. But
I'm glad that it's been done that way, and the reason why I say that is because if it hadn't been done that way, the only technology that Google would have been able to use to achieve a seamless interactive webcam experience across platform would have been Flash. To be fair, the plugin that they downloaded was basically some API stuff to actually access the video for Linux and the audio layer and bring that into the browser. So
I guess all I was expecting was that, as I use Chrome anyway, I would have liked that to have just been in an auto download, an auto
to
update.
Come as part of the package or just seamlessly.
Yeah, because obviously it silently updates anyway in the background. So one of the updates could just have been that API, and it could have downloaded 2 megs of drivers, and I could just be using it. You know, and that'd be like, that's quite cool. Whereas instead,
I agree.
I
hadn't thought about it like that.
Faff of clicking.
So. I agree. Yeah, I had to do the same. I mean, it was seamless. I installed it on Kubuntu, and I'm using Chromium, which is not quite the fully branded version of Google's Chrome browser. But it downloaded the plugins and installed it seamlessly as a dev package, no problem at all, and just worked straight away like that. So it wasn't really an issue. But I can understand. Yeah, I mean, that's helpful if the user doesn't have to do anything. It's just there. You click on the cam and it starts up. So that's
it's only
that's
a minor thing,
Google.
But I liked it. I mean, the experience is fairly synonymous to Skype, really. Obviously, I think Skype's kind of group video chat slightly wins, but you have to pay for it. So,
have you used the Skype's like the group video chat?
No, only one on one. But I've seen the other one in action, and it's kind of similar to the one on one, but it spreads all the videos around the screen, so each one in the conversation is equally sized.
Okay.
Whereas obviously with the Google Hangout, you kind of have to click on one of the little pictures to make it the big picture.
Yeah, okay.
But I mean, it's all fairly minor stuff, and I think the Google Hangout user interface could do with a little bit of tweaking as well. I think that's got a little way to go still.
Mm. Yeah, so there's a little bit of polish there. Well, I have to say, again, I was really impressed with it, my opinion. I enjoyed the experience wholeheartedly, obviously. And maybe that it was slightly different from my perspective, because I was sitting in my office on my own. You two guys were here, obviously, together. So you have this, so you naturally have the sense of another human being in the room with you. Where I sit in my office at home, I don't have that sense.
Yeah.
I don't know, you can start the violins now, if you like.
It's playing. It's just very, very small. You can't hear it.
But what I realised was that I got a really distinct and quite strange sense of connection. You know, I could see whoever I was talking to on the big screen, and I could see Jack or John or John or Jack or whatever along the bottom there, being able to interact. And it felt like sitting in this environment here, just chatting away and talking to one another. And I think we spent about 45 minutes in that hangout, just chatting about stuff. And then when we all of a sudden started playing YouTube videos and talking about those in the hangout and stuff, I just thought to myself, this is just way cool. Way cooler than really anything else.
Being able to joint watch YouTube videos is pretty cool.
They'll
presumably extend that. I think it won't be long until that's a little whiteboard you can all draw on and things, and then it'll be really usable, you know.
That'll be fun.
Well, that is, I mean, they already have the technology for that, because they bought Etherpad, the company the open source company, so that's all there and ready to go. So I'm really, really impressed with it, so much so that I'm already thinking about diminishing my personal Twitter account, not the company's account, but my personal Twitter account. I'm effectively, I've been posting onto that and saying, look, I'm moving to Google+, DM me if you want an invite, and eventually, you know, I'll move away from Twitter. I'm not going to bother with that at all. I don't have Facebook, and I'm not going to bother with that. My investment is going to go into Google+, and I'm going to set that up and really get invested into that, because the platform gives me exactly what I'm looking for. And my good pal Jack, of course, recommended this little app.
That's right, the Google+ app. Yeah, it took me a while to find it at first, but I think that's just because I was a bit fast off the blocks. But the Google+ app, it's, looking at it now, it does, it's very simple, streamlined. But if anything, it's a little, I mean, this is a minor point, because overall I think it's a lovely little way to access Google+. But it's a little bit simplified in terms of its functionality. I mean, here it says you can access your stream, Huddle, which I only found out the other day what a Huddle was.
What is a Huddle?
It's kind of like a group chat sort of thing. I mean,
kind of a hangout, but without the video.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't huddle much. But and of course you can access all your circles. I mean, I quite like what you can do here with photos. Like ties in with Picasso, big fan of Picasso.
I posted a picture of Jacob with some sunglasses on from that, and I was impressed with that. That was cool.
See, the problem I have with this is the same problem that I've got with the app in general, and this is a minor thing, but I'm sure it'll fix this very soon, is that you can't edit or modify your albums to any reasonable degree. Like, I wanted to delete a couple of pictures, which should be as easy as deleting them off your phone the way you normally would, but you can't do that on here yet. You'd have to get to a computer
and do it
that way. And it's the same for things like your profile information. You can't edit your profile or add a new profile image like that at the moment, which is the kind of thing that the Facebook app enjoys already, but I dare say it didn't in the early days.
Yeah,
so I'm not in the least bit surprised, but I'm 100% confident that they're going to like fix these little issues. I mean, this is basically just an app to get it up and running because people were clamoring for it, basically.
And we should say that that's the app for the iPhone, and of course the Android version was out before and is ahead of that, I think, in terms of, you know, Android's got a little bit more functionality than that as well, as I think, so obviously there's chasing on those two platforms.
I've not used it, but yeah, I've no doubt that that one's much more together and much closer to what people are expecting with this, but this one will be right behind it, I dare say.
Yeah.
I guess Google can push out Android app updates when they want, really, but on the iPhone there are Apple's when you own the marketplace, you don't have to have a review process, do you?
Yeah. I think they've probably got a bit of sway in that area.
Well, I'm surprised they let them do it, Apple, but there we go. Cool, okay.
Fantastic. So final predictions for where Chrome will be in 3 months' time, 6 months' time, or a year's time?
Still here.
Do you think it's going to... I guess there are three options. It's gone, or it's not gone, but it's died.
It'll change shape. It could destroy
one of the other social networks, or it could fit into the niche, and there could be three of them sitting side by side, equally powerful.
That one. I like that one.
I think it's going to do the 100th monkey, what they termed the 100th monkey. And very quickly, what this was that the Americans did some atomic bomb testing on some of the atolls, and eventually they wanted to find out when they could put life back onto the island. So what they did was they took a colony of monkeys and put the monkeys on the island, and they found that one of the problems the monkeys were suffering was that the monkeys were eating coconuts, and the coconut husks were slightly radioactive. So they taught 10 of the monkeys to wash the coconut husks in the water before cracking them open. Of course, the other monkeys came to the watering hole and learned how to do this. And so slowly it grew, like 15 monkeys, and then all of a sudden, a week later, there were 25, 30 monkeys doing it, and so on and so forth. And when they reached the 100th monkey that did it, all of a sudden, all 1,500 monkeys just suddenly all started washing the coconuts. And I think it will do that. I don't think we're at the 100th monkey yet with Google+. I suspect that'll probably happen in the early part of next year. Once we get kind of Christmas period out of the way and we go into January, I think people will come across. They'll experience it the way we have, and all of a sudden, whoosh, it'll go. Yeah. And I think 2012, it'll really happen. So my prediction, Google+, like a rocket in 2012, I think it'll explode.
So as soon as 100 monkeys know how to wipe the radiation off Google+, it's going to go.
You got it.
Did any of the monkeys grow to gigantic proportions?
Only in certain areas. Maybe there's an app for that.
Radioactivity is dangerous, by the way, for everybody listening. So
remember to wash your coconuts.
That's right.
Cool. Okay. Well, thank you very much for listening, everybody. Remember, do get in touch with us. You can email us show@random.org, or of course you can follow us and interact with us on Twitter. @random is our Twitter name.
We'd love to hear from you if you have any apps that you'd like us to review, or any topics that you think would be particularly interesting for Deep Thought.
Absolutely, yeah. This episode, because of the extended interview we had, we didn't really have an opportunity to look at Deep Thought, but we're going to look at something pretty intricate in the not too distant future, probably the next show or the one after that. So just before we go, John, we reviewed an app back in episode 3, I think it was. It was 3 or 4, where I introduced Magnatune, the Magnatune app, to the show. And I've been doing a little bit more research around that and listening to it a lot more about it. And Magnatune is basically a record label that works and interacts with the artist and for the artist. But they have a great offering to that we can utilise here on At Random, which is... they offer all of their music available for free use on podcasts.
Oh, fantastic.
So obviously we emailed out the last time in the show, and we also let people know, and we were announcing it on Twitter, for bands to get in touch with us if they wanted us to review some of their material on the show. Well, hey, we've got somewhere in the region of 22,000 tracks and about 11,000 albums now, so that should keep us busy for a little while. Anyway, you can find out more about this at magnatune.com. You can go there and you can listen to all of the albums and all of the music for free. And we've picked up a track from one of the Magnatune rock compilations, and that's what we're going to outro with today.
Nice little bit of summer rock to keep you partying with that barbecue.
Absolutely, yeah. So maybe you should have a cold one with that. Be a good idea.
I know I will.
Brilliant. Okay, listen, you take care. We'll speak to you all again in the next show. For this evening, I've been Rick Timmis, signing off. Goodbye.
I have been the Doctor, John Wordsworth.
Wanna get down with her tonight. It's the only place I wanna be. I wanna get down with her tonight. It's the only place I wanna be. I gotta get down with her tonight. It's the only place I wanna be. I wanna get down with her tonight. It's the only place I want to be. I wanna get down.